is my pleasure to present.
Good morning and welcome to the Carmichael Dave Show, starring Carmichael Dave, Jay Mars, and your phone calls on the Fire Wings hotline at 1-800-920-1140. Text in on the Jiffy Loop text line at 44-1140. Now, strap in and sit down. Here's Carmichael Dave.
Happy to report. Today's poll question. Would you trade Buddy Hield? Would you trade Buddy Hield and the Kings pick, assuming it falls in the 8 to 12 range, for Ben Simmons? What do you think those results are so far? 315 votes in. Already a hot.
Like, I'm feeling very pessimistic, so I don't want to put that out in the universe.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's 70%. Would do that trade.
73% would do the trade. So we're not completely in crazy town.
Yet.
73%.
Still early.
You know, and I think a lot of it is 73% people, they're just like, Buddy Hield for Ben Simmons. I mean, yeah, the pick, whatever, but we don't have Buddy anymore.
It's funny. I was thinking the exact same thing. It's like, well,
it's not
wait,
as much about the
if
pick.
We Ben Simmons, whatever, but we don't have Buddy?
We don't have Buddy.
I'm in.
It's not about trading away the pick. It's not about getting Ben Simmons. I think a lot, over half of the people voting yes are doing it just because no more Buddy Hield.
Right.
Like, Buddy Hield has become public enemy number one now.
I was just going to say, was he from a player standpoint? Because he obviously wasn't the number one scapegoat, as we both know, by the fan base. But from a player's only standpoint, it's him, right? Okay.
Yes.
He's the reason why the franchise is awful.
It wasn't Barnes, wasn't Holmes, wasn't Fox. Well... Oh, yeah, I would say the only one that I would have competition for the scapegoating, other than Luke Walton, you're talking players.
Yes.
Is the only one that would compete with Buddy would be Marvin. But I think Marvin, you know, most people are like, well, listen, yeah, I have problems with Marvin, but one of them is how injured he is, and that's not his fault. I mean, it just gets to the point where, like, but there are a lot of issues with Buddy Hield. But you ever, what I don't like is when it just gets to this crescendo wave where it's like, no, now you're going too far.
Yeah.
Like, this is also a guy who's a premier 3-point shooter in the league. This is also a guy that goes out on one ankle and plays 40 minutes.
He's not a guy that's sitting at the end of the bench somewhere that just happens to be starting.
Let's not act like Buddy Hield's a G.
Buddy Hield's a good player.
Right, thank you. Hello. All right, Soundgarden right now.
Soundgarden. The cuts and clips that are catching our eye today. Soundgarden. It's time to go round the world with Soundgarden.
He felt it and he understood it. That's what you train for. That's what you play for. To like a mainstream sports fan, there was this like closing of a loop. I think everybody understands that like sometimes these games put some silly conversation like that to bed, and it doesn't affect the series. But I think that kind of like conversation, that whether it's relevant or not, is a part of being in the NBA. Last night it was like, all right, we could put that to bed.
What was the conversation about KD before the game? What was it?
I think it's the conversation of him not being able to lead on his own.
Ah.
The he couldn't win titles without being on the Warriors. Just, he needs Kyrie and Harden, or else he can't win.
Does Kevin Durant have like some history of having bad games that I'm not aware of in moments?
Not bad games per se.
Like his teams, may
but
not
that have... is it the 2016 Western Conference Finals where he basically got outplayed by Klay Thompson when they were up 3-1 and the Warriors, like that? That was a narrative that stuck with him for a while. It was like, dude can't lead. You're up 3-1 and you couldn't close the door. You're the star player. That's on you. That was a narrative. And then, you know, going from that and jumping to Golden State only perpetuated the narrative more. Then the idea of going to Brooklyn and bringing Kyrie along, and then, oh, you had to go trade for James Harden because none of these guys can win a title as the lead guy. They all three need to be there. No, that's very much a conversation people have had.
Isn't that just, don't you think, though, we get a little overboard?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I'm just telling you that the narrative exists. Not saying I agree with it.
So the Warriors were up 3-1 2015-16 season. And in the final three games of the series, Kevin Durant went for 40 points, 7 boards, and 4 assists in a loss. 29.7 rebounds, 3 assists, and a loss. And 27.7 rebounds and 3 assists in a loss.
There was one of those games where I felt like he just like died, though, in the fourth quarter.
I mean, I don't have the quarter breakdowns.
Right, I know you don't.
But it's just like, okay. I mean, people do have bad games. People do have bad quarters. People do, you know, and yes, choking is a thing. But my goodness, man. When you average 90, when you're at 96, so what? When you average 33 points over the last three games of the series and all losses, like sometimes you just got, I think in this world, we are too reticent to tip our caps to the other people that get paid to win.
Right.
Like this guy might lose, this team might lose, but that team also is really good and they get paid to win.
Right.
Anyways. All right. Number
two. Soundgarden.
Jimmy Garoppolo had said you stayed in touch with him, including congratulating him when you led the 49ers to the Super Bowl. So I was just wondering if, like Robert Kraft, you've reached out at all to Tom Brady this offseason to congratulate him on winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, again, Chris, I think I'll keep those conversations privately between myself and the other people that are involved. Appreciate the question.
Does that mean no?
I don't know.
Is that like is he pleading the fifth?
I don't know. I want to know.
You speak Belichickian?
Yeah, I don't think he has.
That's how I took it too.
But I also don't think that he like maliciously hasn't either. I don't think he was like, you know, I think he drafted Jimmy Garoppolo.
Mm-hmm.
And really liked him. He just happened to have Tom Brady. They probably have a great relationship, but also didn't know each other long enough for it to sour. And maybe Bill shot Jimmy a text. I don't think that he, if he didn't, I don't think he was like, screw Tom, I'm not doing it. I think it was more like, hey, Liam.
I just think there's this idea because Belichick and Brady were together for so long that they have like some great relationship or some great relationship that was fractured once he left. Is it possible that the player and coach that spent all that time together just aren't really close? That it was more football related than anything else? Like something tells me Brady and Belichick weren't hanging out in the offseason ever. Like they didn't get the wives together, go on a cruise somewhere.
I think it's kind of like your ex-wife, dude.
Yeah.
Like the relationship runs its course. You've had great times. You'll always love each other, but you just get sick of each other. It's time mm-hmm. to move on. It's not like some big, crazy conspiracy theory. It's okay. I have bosses I worked years for in the past that I love. I wish well, but, you know, I'm good.
They're good.
They're good.
Everyone's good.
We're good. All right, number three.
Soundgarden.
It's a fair question. The reason is because you're not us. You know, we allow our in-house people to do that because we trust them. We know what they're going to put out and what they're not going to put out. We open the can of worms with you and say you can film this but can't film that. Then we got to spend all our time policing whether you pushed it over the line or not and showed a two-man route combination or showed a complete play that we don't want our opponent to see. So why are we going to try to police, you know, the media when they don't work with us and for us, you know? And that's exactly why, because we do have valuable information. If it was just going to be the one-man route you put out, it wouldn't be a problem, but it never stays there. It never ends up being that. The envelope always gets pushed. The slope always gets slippery. And then stuff goes out that we don't want out, that we don't want our opponents to see. Or even our personnel evaluators to see about our players in practice that we don't need them to see. So it's a competitive type issue that way. We can control our people. We can't control you in terms of what you put out.
I'll tell you right now, I think John Harbaugh is dead on. I know that this screams of old man look at my life. I think he's dead on. And honestly, I have no idea why NFL teams don't. I have no idea why NFL teams in these situations don't ban cameras. You have an interview area where cameras are allowed, and the team will release B-roll and still photos
right.
for you to use on your newscast.
Their discretion.
At their discretion. The fact that they allow live cameras into camps where they're running right. plays is idiotic to me.
I think he's correct. I just, the way he sounded really angry about it, it could have just been delivered better, but his message is 100% spot on.
We'll take a break.
Yeah! That was nice! Coming up next.
All right. Three for madness. What was the bigger choke job, the Bucks or the Sixers? That's interesting. Garrett Cole was whining yesterday.
For Pete's sake!
he's got to calm down on the language. And the Diamondbacks looking to set records against the Giants today. We'll do that next.
1, 2, 3. It's 3 for Madness time. 3 for Madness. 3 questions, 3 answers.
1, 2, 3. Woo!
It's 3 for Madness. Here's question 1.
All right, real quick. Just our text line is 916-339-1140. And I'm not trying to be a D-bag about this. I just am going to test something out here. I got a guy on the text line, longtime listener. I guess the city's getting a motocross coming up in September, like a motocross event.
Nice.
Okay. And he really wants us to cover it. And I'm like, listen, it's like there's just not an appetite. It's like college sports or high school.
High school lacrosse.
Like people, no, just high school sports in general. There's not this huge appetite for it. And that's not, it's not me choosing it.
Not Monday through Friday in a morning drive program, no.
But you know what? Fair shake, because sometimes you get it wrong. 1-800-920-1140. I'll stop down the show and take the call. If you want motocross coverage on this station, now's your time. 1-800-920-1140. Get your call in. Just tell me you want motocross coverage. And we will log your vote. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. That's all. I love it when big events, the World's Strongest Man competition is going on in Sacramento right now. How about that? The strongest people in the world will be literally and have been literally pulling trains. And it should be 109 degrees today.
Hope they have water.
They picked like the, well, they didn't pick. It's not their fault. We planned a long time ago. But what a weekend to do an outdoor strongman competition. By the way, and I'm not making a joke. I swear on my kids I'm not joking here. Is there a World's Strongest Woman competition?
No idea.
Because there should, right? Shouldn't there be?
Yeah.
3 for Madness. Question.
Bigger choke job. The Bucks game 5 loss to the Nets or the Sixers game 5 loss to the Hawks?
Sixers, it's just not even close. You had Kevin Durant do what he did. Also at home. And Philly dropped the ball here on the road. Excuse me. I apologize. At home. it's completely not the same. Plus the numbers.
I mean, I thought what the Bucks did was bad, but the Hawks don't have Kevin Durant. And I don't believe the Bucks were up 24 in the second half. I don't believe the Bucks had a 10-point lead with 5 minutes left, less than 5 minutes left. That was an all-time playoff choke job by all the time. Sixers last night. All time.
Yep. Top 10. Oh, dang it. We had a call, but we don't have no way of knowing what I was just about to go to. We have no way of knowing whether or not that was for motocross.
I'm pretty sure that was for motocross, and I'm glad they hung up.
1-800-920-1140. Should we be covering motocross when it comes here in September? Number 2.
Question 2.
Garrett Cole, for Pete's sake, is the latest pitcher upset that MLB has regulated, quote, foreign substances and has made it hard to grip the ball. Should MLB have waited to address this in the offseason?
Yes. Yes, they should have. That is where I do tend to side with the players. If you have looked the other way, for however long you've looked the other way, and now you're putting it really on the umpires. And as Trevor Bauer said yesterday, here's what happened. He tweeted out, umpires are the big winners here. Baseball just made them judge, jury, and executioner. If the umpire dislikes a player or a team, even if a pitcher has literally nothing on his hand, oops, sorry, 10 games. And there's no way for a player to appeal. How do you argue that your hand wasn't sticky an hour ago or a day ago or a week ago? Memo to all umpires, I'm sorry for any of my past transgressions. Please forgive me. And I said, Trevor, wait for it or don't cheat. And then he responded back at me saying, is this cheating? He was holding his palm down to the ground and a baseball was stuck to his palm as if by a magnet.
Right.
And on the video, what he had done is he had taken sweat and then rosin, and that created the stickiness. And Trevor's point was, we don't have defined lines of what is and what isn't.
And there's literally a rosin bag on the mound for you. Like, they put it there for you.
And also, there's a safety issue that was brought up of, you know, fastballs flying at people's face, curveballs getting.
Yeah, Pete Alonso had basically said, hey, I'm all for guys getting some sticky on their hand so there's not a 99-mile-an-hour fastball at my head.
Right.
His teammate, Kevin Bilar, you saw it, took one right to the face this
Horrible
year.
Horrible moment this year. The worst moment this year in baseball. In speaking to people I know in the league, the thing with the this is how it's going to work with the umpires, okay? Everyone gets checked.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone gets checked on both teams. That way there's no managers here. Like, the managers can ask the umpires to check someone, but that opens it up. The way it's going to work, a starting pitcher will be checked at least twice a game, depending on how long he goes. And then each pitcher, as they come in, they'll look at their hat. They'll look at their shoe. Apparently, having stuff on your shoelaces is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll give them, you know, the look, and then they'll watch them on
the
mound.
They're getting the full-blown cavity search before pitching.
Right. What I heard, and we'll move on here, but what I heard consistently from everybody involved, they think this is actually going to be far less of a deal than is being made, that now everybody knows. Everyone's bitching about it, but nobody wants to get caught, and everybody's getting searched. So unless they're absolute idiots, you know, they'll catch one or two people the first week, and that's it. Number three.
Question three.
The Diamondbacks dropped their record-tying 22nd straight road loss last night in San Francisco. Will they break the record today against the Giants?
So here's the thing. I'm going to, in the spirit of the NBA yesterday, I'm going to say, yeah, they because they're in San Francisco. They're going against Kevin Gausman.
Ah, but he can't use sicky stuff.
Yeah.
But neither can the Diamondbacks pitching staff.
I'm going to say the Diamondbacks win today because it makes no sense. It makes no sense. And that's the world we're at. By the way, also, my dad couldn't figure out how to call or text. He wants motocross racing. So that's one vote for motocross. It's from my dad. We'll take a break.
Oh, I just want to say real quick.
Yes.
The Diamondbacks will break the record today.
Yeah.
Giants aren't losing this game.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Now you ready?
I see what you did.
What I do?
I know exactly what you did.
Correctly predict the outcome of a baseball game?
I guarantee you the Giants lose today.
You guarantee that?
Stone.
All right, so Giants fan Jay is guaranteeing a victory. Giants hater Dave saying they will lose.
That's
Got
correct.
It.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is 100% correct. And as usual, I'm correct. By the way, don't you still have like an entire book of paragraphs to read?
I'm waiting on you.
I'm not blaming you. I've been too busy checking out the deals going on at Hoblet right now. You can find your perfect truck at Hoblet Dodge. Tons of brand new 2021 Rams arriving each and every day. The best selections in the state. Light duty, heavy duty Ram trucks. Hundreds of the hard to find heavy duty trucks available from Ram 2500 to 5500. The showrooms are open. They are clean. They are socially distanced. They want you to feel extremely, extremely, extremely comfortable up there. And some of these deals you're going to be very comfortable with. During the summer sales event, the Dodge summer sales event, you know, they say those deals are heating up. So is the weather, right? Hey, now up to $5,000 off MSRP on new 2021 Ram 1500 Big Horns or Laramies, up to $3,500 off MSRP on new 2021 Ram 25 and 3500s. 2.49% financing for 84 months and 7 years, kids. That's thousands in available savings only at Hoblet on new 2021 Ram 15, 25, and 3500s. J.D. Power Customer Service Award winners for excellence, of course, because, hey, they care about you after you drive off the lot. And that's why so many people, not just one, two, three, they buy all their trucks at Hoblet. See the full selection at the Hoblet Ram Truck Center or HobletDodge.com. No hassle, no pressure, ever, dealership. And the best prices, best selection, period.
Yeah! That was nice.
Coming up next.
All right. My teacher. I think Doug Christie's teacher, Bobby Jackson's teacher, the guru of golf, Tom Morton from Hanging Oaks. Yeah, we're going to talk about some of the cool stuff they've got out there, but we're really going to talk about U.S. Open as well. And hopefully he won't make too much fun of my golf swing that he saw yesterday on display. It'll be a fun moment with Tom and our U.S. Open update next.
the number 12 mid-market sports morning show in the country. It's the Carmichael Dave Show on Sports 1140 KHCK.
Right. We've still got a very, very packed show for you. Tom Morton's going to join us from Hanging Oaks in just a few minutes. Jay, do I need to send you a text? And Sam Amish. Sam Amick. He'll join us at 8:05.
Samuel.
Oh, Sam. You know?
NBA poopster. That's his new, not a poopster, a poop stirrer.
Yeah, it sounded like he said poopster.
I know.
Like Napster.
No, I meant more like he stirs the poop.
Yeah. Here's what I want to make sure. I don't ever want Sam to write anything about our show ever again.
No.
Dear Lord. We'll have fun with Sam.
But will Sam have fun with us?
I don't think... here's the thing. I don't think it will be as fun for Sam as it is for us.
Never is.
Because he's going to be uncomfortable. That, like, journalists never want to be a part of the story. But I don't care.
Hey, you don't want to be part of the story. Cool. Don't make
don't
yourself
write stories.
Part of
it. Yeah. Yeah, hi.
Get a new job.
What's everybody saying to tell Ed it's Arco Arena? What do you call it?
They call it Sleep Train.
No, Arco.
Hey, who cares?
I do.
You know what they're going to call it soon? Imploded.
Yes, and I'm glad you said that because Angie Ashby, Angelique Ashby.
Thank you.
Councilperson Ashby.
Call her by her council name.
She's just so cool. I love her to death. And what a hero. What a hero for the whole Kings fight. Now, once again, coming through for her region, Natomas, and really the greater Sacramento region, along with the Sacramento Kings, who deserve a lot of credit for this, too. We'll get into the story as they announced what the old Arco site is going to be. COVID kind of slowed that whole process down, what it's going to be, what they're going to do with it, and Angie's going to come on and help us out there. And then we're going to ask Angie really the question. Now, listen, it's an amazing deal for the people of that area. They're getting a teaching hospital, for gosh sakes. All this great stuff, and all anyone, not anyone, but most people want to know that I know is, are we having a going away party? And also, I got to know, and I don't know that Angie will know this stuff, but like, are they going to demo it like we see big buildings like the Kingdom?
Are we going to have a going away party or are we going to have a seance?
Well, that's the thing. What I want to do, no matter what, there's a few things I want to get done. Number one, I want to get some people and let's all roll out there and light sage, you know, like Kyrie Irving style. And I said this yesterday, demoing Arco may be what ends the curse. We talked earlier about the curse and we're going to do stuff in the off season. This might be a thing. Also, one last tailgate. There's got to be a section of the parking lot that's not overgrown. We have a tailgate out there. And then on top of that, I want to know where the six is. The six-man statue, the golden six.
You mean the one with all the pigeon poop?
Yeah.
Seagull poop?
I really would like for that six to be grabbed and cleaned, refurbished.
And put right in that corner.
Put it in a – well, yes. hell, I'll put it in my backyard, but really where it belongs.
That would be weird.
But it belongs on the Golden One Fairgrounds.
The Golden One Fairgrounds. where the horses go.
The property of the Golden One.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and disagree with that. Let me tell you why.
Uh-huh.
When did that go up?
That was in the Maloof era.
Well, I know it was in the Maloof era, late but I'm Maloof talking era. About specifically. Yeah.
Wasn't it the same year the gold jerseys happened?
Yeah, everything favorites? Was gold. And I know they made the playoffs one year with it, but.
Yeah. Well, that's one more year than they made in the last 15, guy.
I'm just saying, I think it's bad luck.
U.S. Open coverage presented by Frank Cockrell at Retirement Security Centers, also presented by Safe Credit Union. Let them put you first, not second. And by the Roseville Meat Company, your modern day old fashioned. Meat market. No, not that kind of meat market. The kind where I go and get all my Christmas meats and throughout the year. And it is fantastic.
Hey, now.
He is the teacher to the, well, I say the teacher to the stars, but I don't want to put myself in that category. Guys work with our guys, Doug Christie, Bobby Jackson, so many others. Greg Vaughn, I believe, and is one of the finest people, just one of the finest people that I know, and I enjoy not only our visits on the range, but also We have lively text conversations sometimes. He is a good friend, and he's here to talk to us about the U.S. Open. The PGA Director of Coaching and Development out at the Hagen Oaks Golf Complex. That's the official title. I didn't even know what it was. Our good friend, Tom Morton. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Doing great.
Before we get into it, if you wouldn't mind, I like to call it plugging in. I'll have issues on the course. As soon as this is literally what happened yesterday. I got out there, I was warming up, and then Tom says, "All right, what's going on, Dave?" And I say, "Well, I'm having trouble, you know, let my hands, you know, take
easy on that mic."
I know I hit the mic there because I was doing the swing. Hit, lead me through the swing, and I'm starting to get my slice back. And Tom goes, "Yeah, do this, and that." Well, actually, he said, "Do one thing." And he goes, "Take a swing." I take a swing. He goes, "Oh, you're back." I was like, "All right, see you later." I mean, we ended up, you know, hanging out for another hour, but I guess it's like doctors, man. They can just pinpoint. Would you say we had a good lesson yesterday, Tom?
Absolutely, we did, because you came in with, you know, a certain ball flight or a certain way you're striking ball you didn't like, and it got corrected. So that's a terrific time. But the truth of it is, Dave, is if you flash back, you know, a good couple years ago when we first started working, it wouldn't have taken 5 minutes to get that under control, right?
Yeah.
It took a lot longer. You've put in some time and effort, and you've really changed some things. And so, like anybody that's plays the game, we get a little off track. But because you're so close to being, you know, where you should be, it doesn't take much to get you back.
Tom, I'm sorry. We need to go back to what you just said. I want you to know, on the radio, for the dozens and dozens of listeners, you just said Carmichael Dave put time and effort into something.
If I care about it, I do.
He's been playing a lot more golf than he used to. I do know that.
I have put a lot of time and effort in. If I put as much time and effort into the radio show as I did my golf game, we'd
be top
10.
Five.
Yeah, exactly. Tom, how is
well-known fact.
How is it that you, well, I mean, I think I know the answer, but I want to ask you, how is it that a golf pro is such a, and I tell this to so many people. I'm not trying to do a sales pitch for Tom. Tom's got plenty of clients, but just in general, I meet so many people that struggle with their golf game. And then I'll talk to them about a lesson I had with you, and they'll say, "Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about getting lessons," and it drives me bananas. It's not like it's, you know, $500, you know, a lesson type of stuff. It's depending on who you go to, it's relatively affordable. Especially, I mean, in most cases, you're getting a lesson for one or two green fees. And I don't understand, Tom. Why is it that? Why isn't everybody starting out or consistently getting golf lessons? Is that just a lack of PR? I mean, what? Because it helps so much.
You want to know a crazy stat? Is that less than 5% of golfers take lessons?
That's insane. Is it partially because guys like, you know, they see Bubba Watson win the Masters and afterwards he goes, "Yeah, I've never taken a lesson. It's all natural." And they go, "Well, is it an ego thing?"
No, I think golfers in general look at it as, you know, how much time and effort are they going to put in the game? And I think the industry is at fault a little bit too, in that sometimes that, you know, not everyone they go take a lesson has that aha moment, and maybe they walk away thinking that that made me worse, which shouldn't be the case and isn't the case. And so, you know, I think it's kind of on both sides. And just like you're doing, I absolutely recommend that anyone that wants to get in the game or is in the game to get a little help, because as you found out, it makes a huge difference. And golf, as popular as it's become through the pandemic, might as well enjoy it a little bit more, right? More pars, be more birdies would make the experience a little bit more fun.
Tom, I'm one of those guys that I haven't picked up golf clubs in almost 20 years. I got bad hips. Talk to the guy who maybe wants to get back into golf but has those reservations because they think they're going to get out on the course and just absolutely stink it up, when, like you're alluding to, there is a method for you to, before you get back into the game and go play 18, to work out some of those kinks that you have.
Yeah, every single golfer and human being is different, right? And so I think most coaches approach it that way and find out what can this person, you know, physically do and not do, and then they make decisions on what we need to do in the golf swing to match what the actual human can do. And if it's approached that way, everybody can get better. And we have multiple programs with golfers with certain disabilities and folks that might only have the use of, you know, a single arm or a single leg and whatnot, and they get better. And so, you know, I think like I just said, anybody out there that really wants to and will put in just a little time can definitely improve.
Tom Morton, Hagen Oaks Golf Course, joining us. I'm glad you said that because when Jay was asking his question, it made me think. It was very early on when I started coming out to you, Tom, and I'll never forget I was warming up on the range, and there was a gentleman. I don't know how to describe it, and you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. But there's a gentleman who had one arm, and I want to say was like in a big, like back brace type of thing, so he could stand up, and he was right in front of me, so I could see him swinging and see his ball flight. And this guy with one arm, and God knows what other injuries he had to deal with, was hitting balls better than I could imagine I would hit. And I look at that, and I know you've done a ton of work with the disabled. You've done a ton of work with veterans. And I think anybody like me, you know, when my dumbass goes out there and I'm pissed that I'm slicing, and then I see these people, and in many cases these heroes that you take time with, that put in the work and effort against insurmountable odds and somehow are able to go right down the old fairway, that if that doesn't teach people like me that, yeah, you can work and you can succeed, I don't know what does. And I'm guessing you get much more out of it than you give, and you give a ton.
Absolutely. Those golfers that, you know, if you can just get them to hit it a tiny bit further, or, you know, get them to enjoy the game a little bit more because of, you know, those small little tweaks, and the people that are dealing with a lot, both personally and maybe physically, those absolutely are the biggest joys. Because like anything we do, right, if you're going to spend time doing something outside of work and your family that brings you happiness, if you can improve that area, you know, we really are helping them live a better life, and that's what it's all about.
Well, and let's be honest, playing golf when you're not losing, you know, two sleeves of balls per round, when you're able to score, and we all know this, I mean, for 99, I think, percent of golfers out there that struggle to break, you know, 90 or 100, you can have a crap day all day, but hey, that one birdie or that one par, that one 50-foot putt, it's all completely different. Now, in your case, and now I am doing a sales job out at Hagen, but it's for a good reason. We all watch golf on TV, and I think it's so cool, the technology that's developed for the viewer, where you'll see someone hit a ball, let's say off the tee, and they've got the shot tracer where you can see the draw or the fade or, you know, the launch angle, this, that, the distance and all that. And there's been work being done out at Hagen every time I go out there on the driving range now for a while. And then I think last week or the week before, you guys finally unveiled it. So when people go to the range now, Tom, what do they get on top of just hitting balls that almost is like them being on TV?
Yeah, the technology that's been installed is the same kind of thing you would find at Top Golf. It's called Top Tracer technology. Only in our case, we're doing it at a real golf setting. You know, real range balls and a setting that you feel like you could, you know, work on your game a little bit more. Obviously, Topgolf is fun. It's a great social atmosphere, maybe not something you would go work on your game at. And so we brought that technology here. Every station on the front of the range will have a monitor. And if you choose to use it, every ball you hit, you can play games. You can know your distances and some statistics about the golf ball. You can actually play different golf courses. Like the other day when we were testing it, played a hole or two at Pebble Beach. So, I mean, it's really fun and really great for your game because you, one, will know your distances. Two, it's a perfect way to have performance-based practice, which means you're not just standing there hitting, you know, 107 irons in a row. You're changing clubs, you're changing targets, you're changing distances you're hitting, and it matches what you do on the golf course. So that's a great way to get better.
Tom Morton with us. Tom, the U.S. Open starting this morning. And we had a nice conversation yesterday. There's been a lot of talk about Brooks and Bryson, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, and there was a lot of hope amongst many fans and many in the media that they'd get paired up together. And I'm curious where you stand as a steward of the game. Do you think the USGA should have popped those two together?
I don't. You know, I think that you got to let it happen organically. There's no doubt in the, you know, coming weeks, whether it's this week, next week, or the week after, they are both, you know, a couple of the best players in the world at the moment. They're going to find their way into the same pairing because of how they've played. And I think when you let it happen that way, it's going to bring, you know, even more interest and, you know, if you want to use the term drama to the game. You know, I think the USGA isn't all that interested in creating, you know, manufactured drama, so to speak. They are, you know, as they certainly would call themselves the keepers of the game here in the United States. And I think they just want to hold a wonderful championship and not also forget about, you know, all of the other amazing players and amazing personalities that are in the game. And so for them, I mean, I think there's a pairing with like Rory, Dustin Johnson, and I don't know if it was Spieth or some other amazing player. I mean, think about how amazing that group's going to be to watch.
Rather than
we've put these guys together.
Tom Morton joining us this morning. Sorry, I almost cut you off there a little bit. Another one of the storylines going in, obviously, to the U.S. Open is Phil Mickelson coming off of that PGA Championship win. I'm wondering, when you were watching Phil in that tournament, did you see something with that coaching eye, like an adjustment maybe that he made that he hasn't made for quite some time? Or do you think that was more a guy that is just great at what he does, catching lightning in the bottle at age 50? And if so, how do you see him playing in the U.S. Open this weekend?
The PGA Championship is a combination of everything. I mean, if you look at him, obviously he's done amazing work and got himself physically as good as he's been in a long time. He drove it just as far as, you know, anyone in the championship. I think on 18, he had the longest drive of anybody. He clearly has one of the best short games. And if Phil puts it well and makes some good decisions, and I think because he's matured, he's making better decisions. You know, you throw all those things together and lightning in a bottle and boom, here's an amazing championship. And golf is that way. Golf is something that you can go weeks and weeks and weeks and not quite have it. And then find something on the range or the putting green a couple days prior and just, you know, regain confidence and boom, you go win a championship. So this week, do I think he's going to win? I don't. I think that his driving of the golf ball is still a little suspect. And the rough, if you've listened to any of the commentators, is very long around the green. I think he's going to do well, but I don't think he's going to win this week.
Tom Morton, Hagen Oaks Golf. And I want to get you touched on it a tiny bit, get into the U.S. Open. A lot of, you know, people look at golf and they think a tournament's a tournament, which is that'd be like me quoting you a law or something that's old and obsolete in an argument. So in this case, why is the U.S. Open so unique, so different? And as often, or maybe even more often than not, we might see the majority of the field not in red figures at the end of Sunday.
The USGA has always sort of wanted to protect par. And when you do that, you know, the players, especially these days, they are so good. It is, even those in the industry close to it can hardly see just how good these people are unless you're watch them day in and day out. I mean, they are incredible at what they do, like any professional athlete. And so to protect par, you have to have it at some amazing golf courses that are challenging, difficult, long. And then in the USGA's case, they certainly narrow the fairways a ton, grow the rough out, and make it very, very challenging so that the winner, you know, might be around even par, maybe a few under.
Now, it's tough to predict, you know, hey, who do you think is going to win this one, Tom? But in your mind, if you had to pick two or three golfers that you think are going to be in it on Sunday, who do you like? Because it's a combination, right? Who do you like that's got their game together right now? And then obviously, who do you like, and maybe it's the same thing, that maybe their game fits this course?
I think some obvious picks that you're hearing a lot that I do like. I think John Rahm's going to be there. I think Kepka's going to be there. There's a, you know, younger player, Xander Schauffele, that's going to be around there. Tony Finau. Well, I think some sleepers could be, there's this Will Zalatoris kid who's been popping up in majors, and his record in the last four or five majors is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. He could be a great sleeper.
What do you think, last thing for you, because we were talking about sleepers, and I love that you got Zalatoris in there, and obviously Xander Schauffele has been doing his thing. So I'll give you two questions. Let me give you the first one. What do you think of Victor Hovland's game? And I look at him, and I feel like we're watching a future superstar. Am I a little early on him? Your thoughts early on his, what he's put together?
Oh, amazing so far. He is one of the brightest, best up-and-coming players on the PGA Tour, and I think he absolutely has got a shot this week. I think if I saw correctly, he's like a 24-1 odds, which is pretty darn good. Compared to a lot. So I think he could definitely be there. I think by the time his career's done, he'll have two or three majors.
And then last thing for you, Tom, Ricky Fowler not in the field. Ricky Fowler, one of the brightest young names in the sport. Instant endorsements all over the place. Universally loved, but has taken some criticism. Some have said he's focused more on his endorsements than the game. Maybe he's got a his mind is elsewhere. This is a kid that not that well. I mean, not a kid. He's grown up, but what was it? Maybe 2 or 3 years ago, he was, I want to say it was fairly recently. What was he? Top five in almost every major, this year. He obviously has game. What do you think's happened to him?
Well, I think it's just the game. I mean, let's look at what Jordan Spieth went through right before he started coming back a little bit this year. And he has multiple majors. It's the game. If you just get a little off and then maybe start chasing something with your golf swing or, you know, looking elsewhere. Sometimes you get people that are switching coaches multiple times because they think that's the answer. And, you know, you just get in this place where you're searching and looking. It can take a little bit to come back from that. But as talented as he is, I think he's going to, we'll see him back in his normal place in the next year to year and a half.
Well, based on what happened yesterday and what's happened over the last few years, why doesn't Ricky just give you a call? I mean, come on.
And where can he give you a call at, Tom?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, if that's thank you, Jay. Yeah. If somebody wants to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to do the smart thing instead of me going out and hacking it around or continuing my what do you always say? Not muscle memory, brain memory incorrectly. Yeah. How can they contact the course or the shop and get some education and get some lessons?
Yeah, whether it's, you know, through any of our, you know, brand new golfer programs or, you know, golfers that are, whether beginner, intermediate, advanced, whatever level, they can call our golf concierge and talk through what different programs and opportunities there are. And that's 916-808-2531.
You know, since I got, I played Little Linker as a kid, then didn't really pick it back up until my late 30s. And since I've gotten back in, one thing I've learned about golf is a lot of camaraderie, great people. And I've talked to, you know, I'm very close with the people over at Wood Creek. I love me some Winchester, you know, and it's not this cutthroat competition. Everyone roots for everyone, but the stuff that Tom and his colleagues do and the whole family, really the whole Morton family, with First Tee, which is such a tremendous, tremendous organization. So many other things they do that I'm not even naming. In fact, yesterday when I got there for my lesson, I looked in front of me and there's, you know, 50, 60 kids eating lunch at a picnic bench, just having a blast. And I'm talking about kids of all shapes, all sizes, all creeds, colors, religions, no politics, no garbage. They're just out there trying to learn the game of golf at a very affordable and I'm sure sometimes complimentary rate. And I've said it to you privately, Tom, but just publicly to thank you, the whole Morton family, everybody out there, Frank LaRosa, everybody involved in just really doing everything you can to bring the love and joy and agonizing frustration of golf to people that may not necessarily always have access to it.
Well, we love the game and we recognize what it can do for, you know, whether young, younger, older, how it can really improve someone's life. And there's so many wonderful people in the game willing to support those on the journey, both in golf and life. And so, you know, we feel like the more we can bring into it, the, you know, as I said earlier, the better lives people can have.
Go see Tom and his friends over at Hagen Oaks and go check out that shot chase tracer. Tom, I'm sure I'll be wanting to plug in very soon. You're always very gracious with your time, and I appreciate you coming on this morning. Thank you.
Sounds great. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Thank you. That's Tom Morton. Seriously, really good dude.
Yeah.
Really good dude. And
knows a few things about golf, I'm told.
You know, honestly, like borderline, like pro golfer,
mm-hmm.
who is widely regarded as one of the best teachers in the country.
Right here in our backyard.
Right here in our backyard. So get out there, have fun, and enjoy the love of golf. And you know what? It was. We have 1 minute left, but I got to say, there is something about watching. I wish, and Tom and everybody are trying. God, I wish. I know it can never happen, but I wish there was a way where you could just check out clubs, have courses specifically for kids. Watching those kids out there and knowing that I was one of them. I was Little Linker. I had I still remember getting my polo shirt. My dad took me there when I was like 7, playing around, you know, hitting it around at Foothill and every other court at Hagen. And just to see these kids, you know, eating their sandwiches and talking about how I hit this one and I hit, oh my gosh. And then seeing them out on the range, and when they get a hold of a ball, that is a sport that needs to be accessible for everybody. So much fun, and God, we have so much land dedicated to it. Let's get the kiddos involved more. We'll take a break.
Yeah! That was nice!
Coming up next.
All right. The most powerful man in the NBA. Also writes for The Athletic, Sam Amick. He'll join us next.